This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Follow a Standard Orbit, Mr. Chekhov, and take us home.
Hi, sir.
It is the word of Landru.
Joy to you, friends, and thanks for joining us here in Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated show to the original series. My name is Drew, or Landru, and with me today is my co-host Mike from Commentary Trek Stars. Hey, Mike.
How's it going?
It's good, it's good. Well, today we're going to talk about another character. We're quickly running out of characters.
This is the last of the seven, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
So, I think maybe next character we'll have to, like, combine people. Like, we'll talk about Kyle and Hinnendorf, you know, kind of...
Wow, that's going to be an interesting conversation because I don't really know anything about either of those dudes.
Right, exactly. Yeah. No, we'll have to combine, like, eight of them. Like, all the red shirts over here and all the blue shirts over here.
Well, we could do, like, Harry Mudd. We could do some of the Klingons, you know?
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
Well, we'd have to do the Klingon ones with the orb.
Yeah.
Another standard orb it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good idea. We need to talk to them about that.
Mm-hmm.
But today we're going to cover the last of the main seven and probably the most underutilized, even less utilized than Chekhov, maybe.
Yes, definitely.
Uhura.
Yes, Uhura.
Poor Nichelle Nichols. Can you blame her for wanting to leave the show after the first year?
No. I can't, because they gave her literally nothing to do. I mean, there's that joke in, you know, Galaxy Quest where she's like, I've got one job, is to answer the freaking phone. It's
yeah.
Like, that literally was all that Uhura did on that show.
And looking at, like, Cushman's book and talking about, like, the early drafts and stuff, Uhura usually had something to do. But then it was the first thing cut for time, or
yeah.
We really don't want to pay Nichelle this week, so let's, you know.
Right. Ridiculous. But, you know, I guess that was the nature of things and the way that the world was back in 1966, too, you know.
But when Martin Luther King tells you to not quit your job, you listen.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess he would be a pretty persuasive voice in that situation.
And if she had quit, then we might not have Whoopi Goldberg, who was inspired by Nichelle, seeing a black woman on television not being a servant or slave or just there for comic relief. I mean, she's there, and they treat her equally with Chekhov and everybody. I mean, they, you know,
yeah.
Equally in that, you know, you will get abused this week, and then you'll get abused the next week, because you're not the main characters.
Right. Yes. All of them are given not much to do.
Right.
So in that sense, I guess it is fair.
I mean, they're not in the opening credits. Why would we care?
And that's really, I mean, we've talked about that before, but, you know, it is kind of unfair to, let's say, criticize them for not giving service to characters in that second tier, you know, because really, and basically it's just the three, because Scotty was kind of like mid-range, and then you had the three on the bottom, Sulu, Chekhov, and Uhura, which, you know, they were kind of there just to fill the seats, you know, and it was never supposed to be about them, it was supposed to be about the other three, with some support from Scotty. And, you know, I think what we're doing lots of the times, or what people do lots of the time, is they sort of look at it from a modern television era perspective, where you do have seven characters, and they do all get their moments to shine and stuff like that. And that's just not how you know, the show was set up, and that's not how, you know, television shows were really set up back then. You know, it was always about a star, and then everyone else was sort of supporting that. So I don't really blame the original series for not giving these characters an ample amount of screen time, but that being said, it's kind of too bad that they didn't, you know?
Yeah, because the characters, as we've discussed, I mean, we've been able to pull episodes out of each of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were worth exploring.
Especially Chekhov and Sulu. Uhura, I mean, they really did not do enough with her to even really consider it to be like a character in some cases, you know?
Yeah, there's nothing more telling than on Memory Alpha, her little paragraph. One of the first things is, on Stardate 1672.1, before taking a brief onboard ship sabbatical, Uhura's voice was heard shipwide, reminding her fellow crew members to fill their accurate timesheets via the communications department.
Yeah.
That's a whole section.
Yep. That's important. They need to get those timesheets right. Right?
Right. And it had to be an Uhura that said it over the intercom.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. That's why she wanted to leave, because that's the type of stuff that she was doing on that show.
Yeah, she was making a couple $100 to, you know, maybe sit on the bridge and show off her legs, but usually just, you know, that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, she started, she wasn't in the series until Corbomite Maneuver, so, you know, all out of order or whatever. But she actually, in the first couple episodes, communications officers were gold. I guess before they decided that communications should be services.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. But it is interesting. If you pay attention, there are a few times where she takes over, like, the science department and helm. Like, if somebody gets knocked out, it's not like TNG where, well, there's a guy who's just been waiting off camera for this moment. Sometimes it's Uhura.
Yeah.
Which is neat to see that this character did have the knowledge to run everything on the bridge.
Yeah. I guess it kind of makes sense from a story standpoint if you wanted to look at it that way, in that it's like the crew complement on the original series ship was probably half that of Next Gen, right?
Yeah.
So you'd need to have more versatility among your crew members, because if something does go wrong, you need them to step in to fill whatever spot needs to be filled.
And the bridge is very small, mm-hmm. comparing like the original series bridge to like the Next Generation bridge. So
yeah,
you know, you can't have the people waiting just off camera.
Right.
There's no bathroom on the bridge in this one, so it's not like they can be like, oh, sorry, I was in the bathroom for a second there. Let me take over helms for you.
Right.
For the most part, Uhura is in the background. There's a couple episodes where, like in Charlie X, she gets to sing. Mm-hmm. You know, Nichelle gets to show off her singing voice, which is good until Charlie decides that Rand is paying too much attention to Uhura and makes it so that she can't speak, which thankfully he undoes. So we've got a supernatural ability, and then it's undone. Unlike my and your big problem with the way they treat Uhura in the original series, Nomad wipes her memory completely.
Mm-hmm.
And the only real you know, acknowledgement of that is Chapel teaching her how to read using, like, Spot Can Run. And then by the end of the episode, she's back on the bridge. Like, oh, we fixed her. Wait, is this the same Uhura after this point? I mean, did McCoy, like, this should have been the B-plot, but there was no B-plots back then. So it's like, the B-plot should be McCoy trying to save Uhura's memories and personality and everything, but all we get is, oh, well, Uhura's doing fine. Don't worry about her. She's learning to read again, and, you know, within a week, we'll have her back up and running at full capacity. It's like, no, you can't do that.
Yeah, I know. That's a Star Trek thing. I mean, that's the worst, but I mean, I also hate, like, Next Generation. I don't know if you've gotten to this point yet. Ethics, the one where Worf breaks his spine.
I don't remember. I've read so much about it that I don't remember if I've seen it or not.
And he so they grow him a new spine, right?
Okay.
Which is cool and everything. That's fine. And then the last scene in the episode is him struggling to walk, and like Alexander's with him, and he's like, "We'll do this together," you know. And then next week, it's like, "Hey, Worf, what's going on?" And he's like, "Oh, not much. Just, you know, yeah, walking around the bridge, like like I didn't have my spine grown, you know, last week." I mean, that's not nearly as bad as Uhura's entire memory being erased, but that type of thing, that lack of acknowledgement of like major events, I mean, that's got to be like the biggest event in Uhura's life right there.
Yeah.
You lose all of your memories. That's the biggest thing that's ever happened to you in your life.
Maybe she doesn't remember. What's terrible is that in the same episode, Nomad kills Scotty.
Mm-hmm.
And then brings him back to life. So Nomad can undo things, but yeah, Kirk talks him to death before he can convince him to undo Uhura's brain.
Yeah. Yeah, Kirk wasn't really thinking on that one. Yeah. Oh, well.
So, poor girl. She just gets abused through most of it. She does get cool lines. I like in Bread and Circuses how she's the one that points out, "No, you dumbasses, we're not." It was a pun, you know. The son of God, and so she got to kind of do like a literal, like the moral of the story, kind of the episode,
mm-hmm,
which I like.
The thing about her on the original series, you know, like we said, she didn't have much to do, but it really was her presence which was important. You know, I mean, she was iconic, you know, quite literally, you know, and the fact that you had a black woman on the bridge of this ship in, you know, I guess you could say it's a command position, you know, in mm-hmm. Next Gen era it would be considered a command position, right? It's like that's really important. And it was making a statement which was bigger than any statement they could possibly make by giving her some storyline, you know? It's like it's hard to see that today, you know, but looking at it in 1966, I can only imagine how big that was. You know, it was big enough for Martin Luther King to say, "Don't quit your job." You know, right. That's pretty freaking big. And so, and that's, you know, sort of like if you look at the three lower tiered of the seven, they're all that, you know, it's an Asian guy, a Russian guy, and then a black woman. And I get the impression that, you know, had the studio or the network let Roddenberry put any of those people in one of the big three roles, he would have. But that just, there was no way that was going to happen on network television in 1966. He probably had a hard enough problem time with...
They had enough problems with number one, you mm-hmm. know.
Yeah, who was a white woman. And it's like, well... it's crazy to think that, but yeah, I imagine it was a huge victory on Roddenberry's part just to get those three people into those roles. So, I mean, what that character did for, I mean, not to overstate it, but society is hugely important, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, like I said, you know, Whoopi Goldberg was inspired by it. I'm sure that dozens of people, you know, just the whole things, you know, I got into engineering because of Star Trek and that kind of thing. I imagine that Uhura just being there affected our planet at large.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I don't want to overstate the importance of our show, Mike, but, you know, the original series changed the world.
Yeah, it did. In a lot of ways.
But moving on, Uhura, like everybody in between the TV show and the movies, she got promoted and got a new job. But of course, that's undone after the motion picture. No, she's still communications officer in motion picture.
Yeah.
But then she you know, takes a teaching job. I don't know what she teaches, though. What do you think she taught?
I kind of assumed that the original series crew, when they all took their teaching jobs, were basically teaching the things that they did on the original series. So she was probably a communications teacher, and Sulu was a helmsman teacher, you know, that sort of thing.
I thought you were going to go for literally what they did on the original series. Like, it's, okay, look, if you meet a robot and that robot seems overly logical, you could probably out-logic it and it'll blow itself up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's
learn from our experiences.
That's one of the advanced level classes, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's the bonus class. That's when Uhura gets tired of talking about, you know, well, you pick up this little earpiece and you put it in your ear.
Right.
And then you open the hailing frequency by pushing this button, not that button, this button. Yeah, and then you turn around and you repeat whatever it said.
I imagine it's similar. I mean, you know, this happens all the time when you're taking classes like that from professionals in the industry. You know, you find out, like, you know, I took a class, an editing class in college, and the woman who taught it was an assistant editor on things like The Sopranos and, you know, Titanic and everything like that. So she had all these great stories about, you know, working in the industry and working with people, and, you know, she would tell us these things, and it's like, what? You should hear her Stuart Baird stories. But anyway, yeah. So,
he thought she was an alien.
Yes. So I imagine that it's the same with, you know, Uhura and Sulu and those people, where they're like, oh man, there was this one time where my memory got wiped. And then everyone in the class is like, what? That didn't happen. You're crazy. There's no way that
everybody
happened.
Told me that happened. I don't remember.
It's like, now I can't believe anything that this woman tells me, because obviously she's just lying, you know? Because that doesn't make any sense.
So she goes from communications officer and being lieutenant commander to being promoted to commander for Star Trek II and doing cadet training. And then after Star Trek II, did she take this job as a transporter officer in the middle of nowhere specifically so they could steal the Enterprise back? Because that seems really weird. Like, you're a commander, you've got teaching experience, you've got all this experience. I mean, I guess Mr. Adventure does, you know, say, what are you doing out here in the middle of nowhere?
Yeah, yeah. But I don't know, did she take that job specifically for that? Probably, right?
I guess.
I don't know.
What's her cover story? Like, what did she tell her supervisors?
She's like, my career's winding down, you know? Why not? Well, I don't know.
I guess Mr. Venture says exactly that, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Ah, poor girl. But, yeah, she gets to threaten people with a phaser in that one.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
She's barely in that movie. Like, they don't let her come along on the trip, which is weird.
What? Oh, yeah, they leave her behind.
And they're like, we'll meet you on Vulcan at the end of the movie. And she's like, okay.
I forgot that she wasn't even part of the big six. There were only five of them going after Spock.
Yeah.
What?
It's crazy. That's
even
thought
into
that
the
was
movies.
Weird. Like, they just were just like, screw Uhura. We're not going to even deal with her in this movie. You know? We'll give her one scene where she can be like a total badass, and then we'll have her show up again at the end.
Well, this is kind of like, it's not necessarily the Worf in the Next Generation movies problem.
No.
But it reminds me of that in that, well, you know, Uhura has to be there because, you know, she's part of the crew. What are you going to do with her? I don't know. I mean, she could stand over here and do this thing.
I mean, they're extremely short-staffed. You know, you'd figure they could find something for her to do.
It's a skeleton crew.
Right.
Anything. You know? We've already established she can fly the ship.
I mean, they even have, like, the whole thing where they're like, Chekhov, why don't you do science? Because.
Because.
And it's like, well, how about, have her do science. Wouldn't that be good?
Yeah. She's done it before.
Yeah. I don't know.
And then, well, it could be worse. It could be Star Trek V.
Yeah, it could be Star Trek V, couldn't it?
Where she fan dances.
Yes, she does fan dance, which is fine. You know,
it's odd.
It's a very strange choice for that movie,
isn't it?
Whatever. And it's one of those things where it's like, wait, am I missing something here? No, okay.
So where did she get the fans?
Yeah.
This, I've never thought about this.
Yeah, all of that. Although, regardless of any of that, you know, what it did do was lead to the moon's window to heaven appearing on the soundtrack for Star Trek V. So that's
good?
There.
Is that a good
Although
thing?
I don't think that she sings it on the soundtrack version.
I don't think she sings it in the movie either.
Which is weird because, I mean, that's her whole thing, right? She's a singer. Right.
So. I read in the trivia that originally she was supposed to be a really good mimic.
Really?
And that's how she was going to entertain the crew, by doing impressions. But when they were just like, oh, Nichelle can sing, why don't we just have her sing? I'm like, really? Your first thought was impressions?
But, you know, I'd love to see that. Right?
I'd love to see Nichelle Nichols doing a Shatner impression, yes.
That would be awesome. That'd be hilarious. Well, what can you do?
Yeah.
I do love that song, though, as it appears on the album. It's great. Okay.
I'll have to check it out. But then in Star Trek VI, she does, in Star Trek VI, I was going to say she does nothing, but she does less than nothing because she has to pull out physical books in order to speak terrible Klingon.
Yeah.
We am thy freighter Ursa.
Yeah. It's weird.
It's really weird.
I mean, I guess it was supposed to be, you know, I mean, part of it, I think, was Nicholas Meyer's obsession with books and his desire to include a physical book in there, which I was wondering about that recently. Like, I saw some interview with him, and he's like, this book, and he held up, like, a book, and I'm like, that's strange that he doesn't have it on like, a Kindle or something. And then I thought, oh, no, wait. It's Nicholas Meyer, I guess.
He's
probably not a big fan of the Kindle, but
he's just keeping up appearances. He's like, well, damn it, if I made this movie that takes place 300 years in the future and they don't use Kindles, I sure as hell am not going to use one.
Right, exactly. But yeah, I mean, that and the fact that it's supposed to be a little bit of comic relief, you know.
Yeah, it is funny.
I'm okay with that scene, you know. I don't know.
It's whatever. Just embarrassing for the character.
I guess so. Yeah.
Well, that actually would lead us into the JJ-verse Uhura, who can speak Klingon on a moment's notice without any books.
Yes.
And even in the deleted scenes for Into Darkness, like, she jokes around with the Klingons a bit. She's like, I'm looking for my ex-boyfriend. You know, he stole stuff from me. And the Klingons are like, what, really? But yes, in the new JJ movies, she does play more of a role. I feel that this modern retelling does take the big three and make it more either a modified big three, because McCoy kind of sits out most of the time. But it does give the seven stuff to do.
Yeah.
Like, everybody's got their thing. Sulu, sword fights, Uhura, you know. Sure, it's still, like, communications-based, but, you know, her relationship with Spock does play into the plot. And it's not just, you know, well, you know, somebody should have a love interest, and wouldn't it be great if it wasn't Kirk? Well, you know, in the original series, she had a crush on Spock, and maybe if Spock was a little more open, he would have been open to the relationship, and this one shows that he would have.
Yeah, the whole, like, she had a crush on Spock in the original series, like, that was in, like, one episode, in, like,
it's
the
true.
First episode, right?
And then she realized, yes, it was. But then she realized that he was cold and mean, and so I guess she didn't want a part of it.
Yeah, she got over it quickly. Yeah, it's weird to say, like, well, the big three are her, Spock and Kirk, because in a way that's true, but it's not the same dynamic, you know? No. Whereas, like, the original series, you know, Kirk, Spock, and McCoy created, like, this trinity, you know, that doesn't happen in the new movies. But in terms of just, like, looking at it as a movie and saying, like, well, who are the three main characters or whatever, then, yes, it is Kirk, Spock, and Uhura. And I'm perfectly okay with that. I know there's a lot of people who are like, man, what, you know, McCoy getting thrown off to the side so that they can have Uhura, you know, that's kind of bogus. And I can kind of see where they're coming from in a sense, especially when you're talking about losing that dynamic with Kirk, Spock, and McCoy. However, I do like what they're doing with Uhura as a character. I think she's really cool. She's one of my favorite characters now. And also, going back to kind of what we were talking about before, if back in 1966, someone was like, hey, Gene Roddenberry, if you want, instead of having, you know, the Southern Doctor as your third lead, you could have, you know, the black woman as your third lead. Do you want to do that? I guarantee you Roddenberry would be like, hell yes. What what kind of, you know, alternate reality are we living in? The JJ-verse, I guess.
The JJ-verse,
right?
Apparently.
But it's like, basically, Roddenberry's vision of the future is here. I mean, obviously, we have a very, 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 very long way to go. But the idea that now, you know, less than 50 years later, it's like, not only is it okay to have a black woman as one of your three leads, but it was probably studio mandated, right? For, you know, in terms of like marketing and stuff like that, it's like that's a good thing. It's not something that you have to worry about losing viewers over. It's something which is going to bring viewers in. Mm. I mean, that's amazing, you know? So,
yeah.
I'm totally okay with Uhura being one of the three leads, and I would bet that Roddenberry would love that.
Yeah, I could see that.
I'm not saying that they shouldn't give McCoy more stuff to do. I think
they
could beef up his role quite a bit, but I absolutely love what they've done with Uhura in these new movies. It's great.
All right, I just hit upon something. This may be radical, but okay, so we've got Kirk, the main character, TOS. We've got Spock and McCoy, like, representing, balancing him out between, you know, the logic and the passion and stuff so that he can be a good captain. I wonder if the 2009 movies turn that on its head. Maybe Spock is the main character with, like, Kirk and Uhura balancing him out.
Yeah, I've thought about that, but I don't really see Kirk and Uhura as balancing him out. I mean, they're both on the same side, you know?
Right.
So it doesn't quite work that way. But, you know, surrounding Spock with characters instead of surrounding Kirk with characters, I think makes sense in a certain way. I'm still not convinced that Spock is the main character. I think they do give him a lot more to do, and it's almost more like Kirk and Spock are equals in a sense in terms of their character's importance, or at least more so than the original series. But like, if you were to say, like, if you need to pick one character who's like the main protagonist, I would still say it's Kirk.
Just a thought.
I had thought the same thing, but I think there is something to that. It's not the same dynamic, but yeah, definitely.
Well, it was fun talking about Uhura today, but that's just one of the Trek topics we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Because we're basically pitching a story arc.
Right.
Like we're Babylon 5, and we've got this 5-year arc.
Yeah.
But we're going to have a 3-year plus maybe the cartoons plus the movies arc.
Earl Grey.
Billy has 25 self-stealing symbols that he needs to trade with a non-Federation species using a different currency. What does Billy do?
The Orb.
They've already been kind of to that next step. I mean, he massages her all the time and helps her out of the tub again.
He knows that she has rashes on her thighs.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so...
To the journey! You know, talk about a heavy-handed message.
Like, literally, on your back!
Like, literally, on your back. Like, I want you to feel the weight. You know, like, this like this is the kind of non-subtlety that makes it fun. Warp 5.
The fact of the matter is, Bakula is playing this character just as he should. It's true that Archer seems a bit uneasy, lacking in confidence. But he's the first human captain to see these strange new worlds.
The Ready Room.
I haven't gotten to the point in my research where I'm that caught up. I mean, I'm very much stuck right in season one of Next Gen and kind of have
That's
blinders
kinda fun.
On everything else right now. Yeah, boy, tell me about it.
Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast.
And we have kind of reached a milestone here, a little earlier than you might think we would have reached that milestone. This is the final episode of Star Trek for which we have a writing credit given to Gene Roddenberry.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
And he wanted it, the first part to be called Becoming Houdini, and the second part to be called Being Houdini.
Should have been called Houdini Begins.
Yes.
And Houdini Rises.
Yes.
Melodic Treks.
At only 22 years of age, he conducted the Munich Symphony Orchestra using 110 pieces, a 60-piece choir, and a 30-piece children's choir. Sometimes you need the children to get them high notes.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and get in on the daily Trek Talk. You'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, the Windows Podcast Directory for Xbox and Zune, or you can stream from the website. Just visit Trek.fm/podcast to get all the links. We have a lot of mail to read. Figured we'd take some time to do that.
Yeah.
We got a letter from Brad a couple weeks ago that said, in regards to our... what did we call it? Parallel Earths. He brought up the point that another interesting thing about the episode Patterns of Force that has always made me curious, both Shatner and Nimoy are Jewish. How did they feel in that particular episode?
Yeah, that is weird.
That is, it's a really good question.
I wonder if there were any conversations about that. I mean, there had to be, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd be curious to see what their thoughts were on that.
Yeah, but we don't have any inside information on that. I wish we did, because
yeah.
I wonder if you just run up to Shatner and ask him about that. How'd you feel about playing a Nazi? What? Wait, what? Brad wrote in again the next week, and he said about our top five. That was a great insight into your top five for season two, and I thought I would share mine. Well, mine pretty much follows yours. I have one that is a one-off that I really enjoy. I think your perspective and interests come into play. For instance, Mike said that he loved gangster movies and hence his pick of a piece of the action. My secret passion is starship combat, as you can see color my choices. His number five is The Ultimate Computer. Starship war games. Computers freaking out. Scientists freaking out. My only issue is that once the Enterprise dropped her shields and powered down, the other ships would have blown her to dust bunnies. The only possible reason they wouldn't have is that maybe they would have seen her starting to power back up and blasted her then. Number four, Amok Time, for all the reasons stated on the show. Number three, Mirror Mirror. I liked most of Deep Space Nine's treatment of the Mirror Universe. The Mirror Universe episode of Enterprise is the only one that I've seen more than once and or recorded. And I especially like the Star Trek Continues treatment of it. If you haven't seen the fairest of them all, you need to. I have. Did you watch it yet?
No, I haven't.
It is super good.
Is it? Yeah, I need to watch that.
It's a direct sequel to Mirror Mirror. Cool. After Kirk and them beam away and beam the original crew back,
mm-hmm.
It's the next couple days.
No, that's cool. Yeah.
His number two is Trouble with Tribbles, again, for all the reasons stated on the episode. And his number one is Doomsday Machine. I like the darkness of the episode as well as the combat. I think that this is probably the best done of the remastered episodes. So there you have it. What thinks you?
That's a pretty solid list. You know, there are a lot of things on there that we agree with. And the ones that we didn't put on there, it's hard to argue with. I mean, they're classics as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing too off the wall. I like all those episodes, too. Thanks for writing in. We really appreciate it.
Yeah.
And we have another, Mark Rodriguez. He wrote us from New York, New York. And he talks about When in Doubt, Throw It Out, our Standard Orbit canon episode.
Yeah, a lot of people talking about this. Yeah.
He says, I must disagree with many of your choices to erase from Trek continuity. Enemy Within, it's an examination of what makes up a human personality. Yes, the shuttlecraft gaffe is unforgivable, but you can't erase this episode. Charlie X examines puberty and grows a Kirk-Spock relationship. Keep I Mud just because you like it rather than it adds to the series? I think you guys need to rethink your parameters. I think you should look at which episodes accomplish what Roddenberry aimed to do. Look at the human experience, examine slash expose us and our culture using a sci-fi camouflage. Episodes that grow the triangle relationship of Kirk, Spock, McCoy, pathos, logos, and ethos are also important. Just my two cents.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on how you want to approach it. And I think we were looking at it sort of like, you know, once you look at the whole series, you know, what is it that you know, you can find one place that maybe you can sacrifice in this place, you know, because it is elsewhere. And, you know, it's not that, like, one episode is super great or super terrible. It's like covering all the bases that need to be covered. And, you know, I mean, like, I, Mud, that was the one, right?
Right.
Yeah, okay. So or is it Mud's Women?
Mud's Women we kept so that we could lead into I, Mud.
Right, okay. And it's like, if that's, you know, there are certain episodes which are, in a sense, untouchable, in which you kind of need to work the rest of this thing around, you know? You've got to have Mud's Women so that you can have I, Mud. And if it's important to, you know, Drew to have I, Mud, then, you know, if that's what makes Star Trek worth watching is watching I, Mud, then that's, you know, an important thing. Whereas Charlie X, I mean, while it does deal with, you know, issues concerning puberty and stuff like that, but is it integral to the show? No. Is it one of those episodes where it's like, oh man, you know, if this episode were gone, I'd be really upset? No. Enemy Within is almost like that for me. Like, I agree with what he's saying on that, you know, and I could almost be convinced to stick that one back in because it is such a good episode. But like Charlie X, I don't need Charlie X. I don't need to ever see Charlie X again. You know, I mean, whatever. And it's like, yeah, does it grow the characters or whatever? I mean, or their relationships? Yeah, sure. If it never existed, would you think that you were missing something? No, I don't think so. It's weird. It's an interesting balancing act, and everyone's list would be different because for some people, Charlie X is untouchable. You know, Charlie X is some people's I, Mud, but it's not our I, Mud. I, Mud's not my I, Mud. I would totally cut out I, Mud. But, you know, I mean, it's Drew's I, Mud, so that's the way it works, I guess. Though,
yeah,
you know, I mean, I think we'll probably read some more here. Like Enemy Within, like, you know, you've almost convinced me to stick Enemy Within back in. Enemy Within, not Enemy Without, right? No? It's terrible. I apologize.
No. Unforgiven. But, get off my show.
But, you know, I think, and I would encourage other people to write in with their opinions, and because our minds can be changed. And I think that you know, once we hear other people's arguments, we can make revisions to this list and come up with the best list.
I kind of feel guilty for wanting to keep iMud in after some of this feedback. Like, Well, the thing is that this is, and I tried to title it well and describe it in the episode description. It's the standard orbit canon. It's not, yeah. We're not saying that this is, you know, and we're not saying the episodes we're throwing out are bad. I mean, we joked about, you know, maybe kicking City on the Edge of Forever out, but in reality, it could probably go. It's our opinion. Of what we think, but we are interested in what you guys think. You know, maybe we'll have a Standard Orbits listener canon.
Yeah, but you know, I don't think that you should feel guilty about keeping iMUD in, because you know, at some point you get to a place where it's like, well, really, none of them work in reality, you know, and so let's just cut them all out. And it's like, well, the whole point is that you are a Star Trek fan. And that there's something here worth watching. And if you're cutting out the things which are worth watching in order to make it completely work, then what you're going to end up with is something that's not worth watching. So you got to keep in your favorite episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks everybody for writing in. That was fun. Feel free anytime. There's a lot of ways to contact us. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send a show and choose Standard Orbit. That'll come to both of us by email. You can use the tab on the left-hand side of any page to send us a voicemail using a webcam's microphone. And you can talk to us and our other listeners at our new Facebook group, the Babel Conference, Trek FM's listener group, which is growing and expanding and always seems to be interesting conversations going on. In social media, you'll find our Facebook page at facebook.com/trekfm. And on Twitter, you can find us under username trekfm. Mike, where can people find you if they want to contact you directly?
You can find me right here on Trek FM doing commentary Trek Stars, and you can find me on my website, commentarytrackstars.com, where I do commentary Trek Stars off topic, and you can also find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K.
And you can find me on Twitter at 005, DOUBLEOFIVE, and you can find me on various other places around the internet.
Yeah, hey, I hear that To the Journey got a voicemail.
Really?
Yeah.
That's not fair.
Come on, listeners.
Step
it up. I want two voicemails for Standard Orbit next week. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
We'll play them on the air. Now's your chance. You can tell us why we're wrong about our canon or anything else. Let's do this.
Or why we're right.
I mean, I guess you could say that too. Whatever.
Well, before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to support our sponsor who helps us bring Standard Orbit to you each week. And our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible's a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have time for. Audible's the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers and even some of the most famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive, Federation, and Spock's World, Audible has something for everyone. Mike, what do you have for everyone?
Well, I've got a random Star Trek book, Star Trek The Return, written and narrated by William Shatner. The description, legends never die. Old friends are reunited and ancient secrets revealed as Kirk, Spock, Picard, Riker, Data, and all of the Federation's best and brightest are enmeshed in a cosmic saga that will test their strengths and loyalties to the very limit. A personal tale of tragedy and triumph that could only have been written and read by William Shatner.
Have you read this book?
I think we have, because I remember reading that and saying, I think that the Reeves Stevenses could have written it as well.
No. I mean, have you read this book?
Oh, no, I haven't.
I have. Yeah. I know that I have. And the only thing that really... It's like they resurrect Kirk with... The Romulans resurrect Kirk with Borg nanites or something that Shatner could not have come up with on his own.
What are you talking about? He's a big fan of Borgs.
Yeah, sure. He knows exactly what Borgs are. But the other thing that really sticks out of my head that I'm pretty sure happens in this book is they recapture Kirk and try to remove all the nanites. And in order to make Kirk feel more at home with the holographic doctor, who is performing surgery on him.
Of course it is.
And you know, the Hollow Dock has got a bunch of people's different personalities combined and stuff. But they like turn off everything but the McCoy personality.
Okay.
And so it's like young McCoy, you know, in the future, holographic, doing the surgery for no reason other than to have McCoy in the book.
Well, that's cool.
I seem to remember that.
Yeah.
You can leave us a voicemail and tell me that I'm wrong in remembering what happens in Star Trek The Return.
Or you could go to Audible, get the book for free, listen to it, and then email us and tell us exactly what's
going
on.
That's an even better idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because as a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day trial to see how great Audible is. So give it a try today, catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read, and that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Standard Orbit and Trek FM. And lastly, there's another way you can keep us in orbit, and that's by supporting us on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find a list of donation levels where you can get things like exclusive digital goodies, early access to episodes, access to our project manager, and even be listed as an associate producer for our shows. You'll find out where the donations can go, like covering the monthly cost of hosting and distribution, hiring an editor for our shows, upgrading our equipment, a bunch of stuff. So if you go to patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find all that, find more information, even find more links to the shows, so check it out. Well, that's it for the main characters, so, I'm really looking forward to our episode on... I can't think of anybody obscure enough.
Yeah, maybe we should skip characters and focus on, Tribbles, or behind-the-scenes people. We could do a Tribble every week for the rest of time.
There we go.
Yeah.
This Tribble, this brown Tribble right here in this shot.
His name is Joe.
Oh, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Everybody, thanks for listening. Have a good week and keep on trekking. It is the will of Leonard.
Mr. Chekov, take us out of orbit. Ahead, warp factor 1.
Aye, sir.